Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment. This is your navigator speaking on February 21st, 2012. And this talk, this recorded talk, is the first of a series of talks I intend to do under the category of navigator briefing. In other words, I'll be briefing you in this audio format along with the written crew notes that I send out from time to time. There's a lot happening right now, and so I think it would be better, it would be to the advantage of us all if I can manage to combine these two ways of communicating. The written form, the continuing crew notes, starting with number 16, and the audio accompaniment with a navigator briefing. And these briefings may also come to you between crew notes. So how are we going to keep track of all this? You may have noticed that with the Gaia Navigation Experiment and the mythogenetic method, such as we apply it, there is a distinctly non-linear feeling to the whole process. A non-linear feeling, yes. I guess that would be a sort of an understatement. Once you become involved in this experiment and you log on to how I am plotting the course of correction, you see immediately that there is a considerable amount of non-linear correlations and parallel and overlapping communications that are required in order to follow this process. So I would propose that we do give some order and structure to my recorded talks in this manner. If you go to the new internet platform for the Gaia Navigation Experiment, which is gaiaspora.org, you will find links to various talks and listed on that site, and also a section for the crew notes and so forth and so on. What I propose is that there will be a category on gaiaspora.org for these navigator briefings. We start with navigator briefing number one, indicating in parentheses CN16, meaning that this is a navigator briefing associated with crew notes number 16, and then followed by the date 21 February 2012. So if the organizer of gaiaspora.org, that would be Simon at the moment, and other volunteers who are coming, showing up in order to get the platform working, follow this format, then we will have a chronological list of navigator briefings, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You can see how and if they are linked to a particular set of crew notes, and you can see the date in which the recording is made, and then each navigator briefing will have a title. So the navigator briefing number one that goes out with crew note 16 has this title, Gaia Self-Navigation, Acoustics, and Anomalous Sounds. So to kick off this briefing, let me indicate a really important point regarding the nature of the Gaian Navigation Experiment, GNE. And I would like to make this point several times right now, in the month of February and March, as we proceed through the seventh second of the 10-second countdown of correction. This point concerns the nature of the time-factored information in this experiment. For instance, today is February 21st, 2012, and the intel that I'm going to present in this briefing is extremely relevant to the current course that the mothership is taking. So what happens if we fast forward to, say, the summer of 2015. And if there is someone in the summer of 2015, which is more than 3 years ahead in the future, if there is someone who happens to pick up this audio file off the internet somewhere, if the internet is still alive and working at that time. But let's suppose it is. So let's say that 3 years from now, you pick up this briefing, this audio file, this recording of my talk, and you first thing you hear that it's dated 21 February 2012, and I'm talking about things happening current with that date. Well, you might think, gee, this can't be any of any relevance to me because it's 2015 and whatever was happening back in 2012 regarding this bizarre program called the Gaia Navigation Experiment certainly is not relevant today because of that information. All the information regarding that experiment is extremely closely tied to real-time events. Well, that would be a false conclusion to draw regarding this information. You see, those of us who are now engaged in the Gaia Navigation Experiment, and more people are coming on board each week, have the unique opportunity to witness in real time how Gaia Sophia sets the initial conditions for her correction. We have the opportunity to witness in real time how the planet Earth itself assumes self-navigation and gradually frees itself from the gravitational capture of the planetary system. That doesn't mean it necessarily leaves the planetary system, which is like a fleet of ships sailing in the huge plasmic vortex of the sun. No, it simply means that she assumes self-propulsion and self-direction within the fleet. So, we in the navigation experiment, which proceeds from March 2011 to March 2014, have the unique opportunity to observe how she does this. We are keeping a record of the experiment, meticulous records, I would say. I encourage you all to keep meticulous records of these 3 years and the observations that you make and the observations that can be drawn from scientific discoveries and scientific facts of science, of geophysics and astronomy that come to light during this time. All this information is a record for the future. So, someone tuning in this particular talk, the first navigator briefing of February 21st, 2012, 3 years from now, would find it just as valuable as it is to us now, though in a different way. People in the future will find these notes and briefings extremely valuable because they will be able to look back and have an intimate understanding of how a certain group of people at the time monitored this tremendous event in the history of the Earth, the history of our species, this event called the correction of the Aeon Sophia. And so someone listening to me in 2015 or 2025 will be able to, in a certain respect, recreate and even relive in their imagination the absolutely unique and extraordinary opportunity of this moment. And so the record that we keep, the chronicles that we keep, each of us, of the course of correction are extremely important and will be of huge value to the generations of the future. So now to proceed with this briefing, which is entitled Gaia Self-Navigation, Acoustics and Anomalous Sounds. My intention here is to address, obviously, this question of the strange sounds that have been heard around the world since, some people say, around August or September of 2011, although certain of these sounds appear to have been heard considerably before that. But let's concentrate on the ones that have been heard, say, since the fall of 2011 and very strongly in the pervasively in January of 2012. Now we're going to disregard those sounds which are faked. those sounds which are part of internet hoaxes that people are perpetrating. The sounds that are merely recorded and may not have actually happened in the sky or coming from the earth. We're going to concentrate on the geophysical and atmospheric reality of the sounds that actually do occur. So not all the sounds are hoaxed, and not all of them are faked recordings. Some of them are actually real. And they are either coming from the earth or the sky, or somehow coming from, let's say, an interaction between the earth and the sky. Now, I've pointed out a number of times already the extreme importance of following these sounds and arriving at an understanding of their meaning in the context of Gaia's correction and the navigation experiment. My main intention in this briefing is to show you how a recent scientific explanation of these sounds confirms the Gaian navigation experiment so far. This explanation was provided by a Russian scientist named Khalilov, Khalilov, and it appears in numerous places on the internet. But you can go look at the GeoChange Journal. That would be geochangemag.org, for an article entitled Strange Sounds in Sky Explained by Scientists. There you have a picture of Dr. Khalilov and the explanation of these sounds. The illustrations that come with this article are extremely interesting from the viewpoint of the GNE. In the first place, we see the most important image, an image that recurs constantly, showing massive coronal eruptions from the sun and the bow shock phenomenon, wherein the Earth is positioned in its protective magnetic envelope, which resembles a spider, you might notice. And the head of the spider is pointed toward the sun, its body is pointed away. And this graphic illustration is an extremely important one for understanding the interactions between the Earth and the sun. To some degree, the cause of these sounds is due to the interaction between the Earth and the sun, or more specifically, to the effects in the ionosphere and the upper and lower atmospheres due to the impact of these massive solar emissions. The first studies that would have pointed us to this kind of understanding, of course, were done by Christian Birkeland in Norway when he discovered the nature of the aurora borealis. It's important to point out, too, those of you who've experienced it firsthand will know that you can hear the aurora borealis as well as see it, and it tends to snap and crackle in a particular way. So from that natural phenomenon of the northern lights, we know that it is possible to actually hear atmospheric phenomenon that arise in the interactivity of Earth and Sun. And so we are talking about acoustical effects in the atmosphere. The interesting thing about this article, which is extremely confirming for the Gaian navigation experiment, is that it points out, the Russian scientist here points out that the noises come not only from the sun or from the impact of solar emissions upon our atmosphere and upon the electromagnetic field of the Earth, but also from the core of the Earth itself. So if you scroll down, you'll see a remarkable figure of an aurora borealis spiral, a spiraling motion of the aurora borealis. This is a natural phenomenon pictured in the northern hemisphere. And I'd like to point out to you that this spiraling activity in the northern lights was indicated to me by a crew member not too long ago, about a week or so ago, timed very, very closely to February 11th. Now, February 11th is a tremendously important day because there was a perigee strike, as we call it, in 13 degrees of Libra, which is in the upper torso of the Virgin. And I've explained in the language of the Gaia Navigation Experiment what that means, that it is indicative of the activation and direction by the planetary animal mother of her first attention. She uses her first attention to actually mutate species and to produce geophysical and anatomical biological changes, immediate, spontaneous biological changes in the world of living creatures. And it's interesting to see the analogy, as it were, the figurative analogy, you might call it, the figurative correlation between reticulation of myelin and this spiraling current in the aurora borealis. Because the way that myelin is reticulated is that the layer of myelin that ensheathes your nerves is built by the growth of a second layer, and the second layer grows and is laid down in a spiral and crawls along the nerve that it is coating, from the root source of the nerve out to the end of the nerve. That is how a new layer of myelin is laid down as insulation upon the wiring of your nervous system. And it's a beautiful omen or correlation to that process, that at the very moment she proceeded to do that, microcosmically in our bodies, there was a manifestation of this beautiful spiraling color of the aurora borealis. Finally, I'd point you to the third illustration in this article, which is one that shows the core of the Earth and stress waves coming from the core through the mantle and out into the lithosphere. Now, how do we start to sort out all this information? I would like to categorize it for you in two ways. In the first place, there is a whole range of sounds happening that could be categorized as due to, let's say, mothership commotion. One of the premises of the Gaia Navigation Experiment is that the planet Earth is undertaking its own independent course through the galactic arms, not necessarily departing from the solar system as such, although I wouldn't rule that out, but certainly navigating by its internal power rather than by being pulled and locked into the power of the planetary fleet. And this process has been underway since March 19th, 2011. I'll give you some specific dates regarding when the Earth assumed self-navigation in just a moment. Due to the Earth assuming its own propulsion through its steam system, which is the volcanic tectonic activity from the under the sea and through the system of volcanic, the network of volcanoes around the globe, and through its sails, by which metaphor I mean the electromagnetic field surrounding the Earth and extending to the ionosphere. Through these two realms, there is a great deal of commotion happening, and so sounds are produced. For instance, the geophysical source of many sounds in the Earth is due to the Earth cracking open in places, due to the shift of tectonic plates, which can produce earthquakes and tsunamis. We hear of great cracks appearing in the Earth. We hear of an escalating activity of the cookers, the volcanic vents that appear beneath the ocean, warming up the ocean. Her steam engines are cranking up, and so forth. All of this activity produces audible noise, just as if you were on a ship, on a massive ocean liner, in which you can hear the audible noise and feel the vibration of the ship, feel the vibration of the engines, and feel the motion of the ship when she turns. The analogy is not just an analogy, but it is a literal way of understanding what is happening with the massive planetary mothership. Now, included in this category of mothership commotion, as I'm calling it, is the weather factor. Let's say that the sun is a source of weather, and is not simply the terrestrial weather that we know, sunshine, rain, and snow, and so forth, and wind, but solar weather. Of course, there is weather in the vast environing region of the galactic arm where the Earth is moving along with the fleet of other planets. For the purposes of the Gaia navigation experiment, I suggest to you that you consider that the sun is not so much a body like a planetary body, and it is not exactly like a star or solid body of a star-like material as we have been taught, because the physics that we have been taught about stellar evolution, insofar as it disregards electricity and plasma, is entirely misleading and false. So I encourage you to consider that when you picture the Earth and the other planets spiraling along, because of what they do, they're moving in open spirals, and even these spirals are not of a perfectly circular axis, they have elliptical axes. So they can be called helices, H-E-L-I-C-E-S. When you picture the Earth and the planets moving along through the galactic arm of interstellar space in these open spiral orbits, picture the sun as a vast eddy of spiral, of plasmic substance, solar plasma, a vast eddy of it. And you know how when you look at a river, you watch a river flowing by, and you look down and you can see eddies in the course of the river. The sun is a vast eddy of plasma in the plasma arm of this galaxy. And so the planets move in that eddy, and they adhere to the contours of the eddy, the solar whirlpool, as it were. As you visualize this, we understand that the course of the planetary fleet, including the Earth, is subject to the weather conditions, the atmospheric conditions, on the larger scale that are produced within this eddy or this whirlpool of solar plasma. And so some of the sounds that we hear are due to the weather of the sun, the coronal solar emissions, impacting the atmosphere of the Earth. And these are sounds that actually come from the sky. This is explained very well in this article. What could be causing this humming in the sky? The article says, these processes include powerful solar flares and huge energy flows generated by them rushing towards Earth's surface and destabilizing the magnetosphere, ionosphere, and upper atmosphere. Thus, the effects of powerful solar flares, the impact of shock waves in the solar wind, etc., etc. So some of the sound is from the weather produced by the sun playing into the sails of the mothership and causing the sails to flutter and to crack and to billow in the wind and to strain under the tremendous blow, the tremendous force of these solar flares, which are happening with unheard of intensity lately. Now, in addition to the sounds that can be attributed to mothership commotion, I would add a second category, and those are the sounds that are sourced uniquely in the core of the Earth. And what is really interesting about this article is that the Russian scientist and his team of geophysicists working at stations in Istanbul, Kiev, Baku, Islamabad, and Yogyakarta in Indonesia have detected a remarkable event on November 15th of 2011, which they attribute to something happening at the core of the Earth. I've been speaking of something at the core of the earth recently in regard to the mysterious and surreal topic of mantis, the giant inorganic mantis creature trapped in the citrine geode at the center of the earth, according to the Sophianic vision story. So, consistent with this description, which is given here in the article, the Atropatena stations that registered a gravitational impulse from the Earth core on November 15th, 2011. Consistent with this scientific evidence, I submit to you that there is some kind of extraordinary sounds coming from the interior of the Earth as well, from the deep interior, from the center. But this sound from the center of the Earth is not necessarily connected with the general commotion of the mothership. It is a particular and independent sound that has its own origin, as I've explained, in the case of mantis, and that has particular ramifications and repercussions that are extremely dangerous for the human species because of the way the sound waves and acoustical effects from the Earth's core tend to excite people with psychopathic disorders. Now, let me make a point, if I can, an eminent point of distinction. And let me see if I can make this crystal clear. The sounds of the general commotion of the mothership are directly connected with Gaia's self-navigation process. The sound that comes from the inner core of the Earth is not a sound due to her navigational, to her assumption of navigation on her own powers, self-propulsion. No, it is due to something else, which nevertheless belongs to the geophysics of the planet. And so here is an extremely crucial distinction for you to contemplate. Although the sounds emanating from the Earth's core, which I would attribute to mantis, are not the direct results of Gaia's self-propulsion, they are intimately connected with her process of correction. In correction, Gaia assumes self-propulsion. The very planet, the mothership on which we live, begins to move by her own powers, steam power and sail power. But at the same time, her process of correction is not merely a physical event, it is also a psychological event for her. It is an event of tremendous shift and upheaval in the psycho-emotional life of the planetary animal mother. She has her history. She has her own life. And just like a living creature such as a human being such as you and I, she has trauma. She has had one particular massive trauma in the process of metamorphosing into the Earth. I've explained this in the Grok talks regarding mantis, the moment of absolute terror for the Aeon Sophia. And so her process of correction requires that the mantis be released from the core of the Earth. And there are acoustic phenomena and possibly even some related telluric and geophysical phenomena related to the core activity, to the core sounds. But these core sounds are not produced by the stress of the mothership as she undertakes self-navigation. They belong more to the realm of the subjective or psychological and emotive life of the planetary animal mother, if you might put it in that language. Nevertheless, the two types of phenomenon of of phenomena are simultaneous. Now, to conclude this briefing, I'd like to point out something to you that is in part a reiteration of things I've said over the last 8 months or so, with the addition of a little bit more detail. I have a map in which I was charting from June 2011 the progress that the planetary mothership was making toward moving into self-propulsion. And you may recall that several times I used the analogy of a tug for the planet Jupiter. One of the operative lines of syntax in our process of charting the course of correction is that memorable line: the correction of Sophia takes place in the apsides of Jupiter. So the apsides of Jupiter, which lie along 15 Aries Libra in the zodiac, in the ecliptic, and the planet Jupiter itself, understood by analogy to a massive tugboat, are extremely crucial for Gaia's process of assuming self-propulsion. Well, I was following this process in great detail from the summer of 2011. Let me give you a little review of how I plotted that course, the timing that I detected, and then we will see how this timing is confirmed beautifully by the report from the geophysicists who monitored these stations around the world, belonging to the so-called Atropatena network of geophysical stations. Around the 6th of July every year, the Earth passes through its own aphelion, and that is the point on the Earth's elliptical orbit where it is most distant from the Sun. Well, of course, that is in the summertime in the Northern Hemisphere, and so that accounts for the fact that it is less warm in summer in the Northern Hemisphere than in the Southern Hemisphere. Because 6 months later, when it's summer in the Southern Hemisphere, the Earth is in its perihelion, which is about 13 degrees of the sign Cancer, or about 103 degrees of the ecliptic. So that happens around January 6th. And when that happens, it's wintertime in the Northern Hemisphere, but it's summer in the South, and summer is warmer because the Earth is nearer the Sun. So this is the line of the apsides of the Earth, which are going to play an extremely important role in the completion of the correction process. But for right now, or at least for the first year of plotting correction, I was observing what happened to the Earth as it moved through its aphelion, the 6th of July, 2011, relative to the planet Jupiter, which stood about 120 or 130 degrees ahead of it on the ecliptic. And you may recall that I gave the analogy of enormous hawsers or enormously thick ropes or cables connecting the mothership to the tug Jupiter. And I explained that Jupiter, through its relation to the Earth within the dynamics of the solar fleet, played an extremely important role. It is pulling the Earth, as it were, into the position where she can undertake self-propulsion. And it did this from around early August 2011 until the middle of November. How do I know? Well, I simply followed the Earth in its orbit. After it moved through its aphelion in July, it advanced through, if you want to place it in the background of the constellations, it was advancing through the constellation of the Archer, then into the Goatfish, then into the Manitou. And around that time, the beginning of August 2011, which was also the month when some of these sounds began to be heard around the world, Jupiter turned stationary retrograde, which means that the massive tugboat connected to the Earth by these two hawsers began to reverse backward toward the mothership as the mothership moved forward toward the tug. So if you visualize this, you visualize the tug pulling in its hawsers, winding in the vast ropes that connect it to the earth. And as it winds in the earth and the earth moves toward it, what happens? Well, obviously, the earth gains a certain momentum because it is naturally moving in the direction of Jupiter, but Jupiter is reversing toward the earth and pulling it into position by these cables. So this is a process that began in August of 2011 when Jupiter turned retrograde on the 4th of August. And then it continued intensely for about 2 months till we come to the 8th of October. This is an interesting month because Jupiter is still reversing. The Earth and Jupiter are much, much closer. The mothership and the tug are much, much closer at this moment. Bear in mind that the tug is in an outside orbit, larger orbit around the sun than the Earth. So there is the orbit of Jupiter. Then within the orbit of Jupiter is the orbit of the Earth. And the Earth is coming around in its orbit. You're looking down. You're watching it move counterclockwise. It's reaching toward the 3 o'clock position. And then it reaches the perihelion of Jupiter itself on August 8th. This is a critical moment because at that moment, the mothership and the tug were almost aligned. The massive hawsers that were pulling the Earth into position and allowing it to gather its own momentum were very, very tight when the Earth moved through the apsides of Jupiter the beginning of October. And I inferred on the basis of this charting process that I illustrate to you here, which is totally astronomical, by the way, I inferred at that time, you may recall, that the Earth would kick in to its first phase of self-propulsion in late October and into the middle of November 2011. As a matter of fact, if you look at where the Earth was on October 29th, it was conjunct Jupiter. And that means that the tugboat and the mothership were side by side. The lines connecting them were very, very tight. Jupiter is still reversing. The tugboat is still moving backwards. So the Earth passes Jupiter on its inside track. Jupiter is slightly backing up. Now try to visualize what happens at that moment. You're looking down on the solar system. You see Jupiter reversing, that is moving counterclockwise, just as the Earth on its inner track is moving, Jupiter reversing is moving clockwise, and the Earth on its inner track is moving counterclockwise, and they pass each other. And the connecting cables are extremely tight, and then what happens? Visualize what happens at that moment. There is a slingshot effect. As the tugboat pulls back, it now begins to let its hawsers out. It's been reeling them in since the 6th of July. But on the 29th of October last year, it began to let the hawsers out, and the Earth pulls away from Jupiter on its inside track and tests its first moment of self-propulsion. And that would have happened in the first 2 weeks of November 2011. And what do we find out when we read this article? It says, there is one more possible cause of these sounds, and it may lie at the Earth's core. The fact is that the acceleration of the drift of the Earth's north magnetic pole, which increased more than fivefold between 1998 and 2003, is at the same time level today, points to intensification of energy processes in the Earth's core, since it is processes in the inner and outer core that form the Earth's geomagnetic field. Okay, elementary. But now get this. Meanwhile, on November 15, 2011, all Atropatena geophysical stations, which record three-dimensional variations of the Earth's gravitational field, almost simultaneously registered a powerful gravitational impulse. The stations are deployed in Istanbul, Kiev, Baku, Islamabad, and Yogyakarta in Indonesia, with the first and last one being separated by a distance of about 10,000 kilometers. Such a phenomena is only possible if the source of dissemination is at the Earth's core level. That huge energy release from the Earth's core at the end of the last year was some kind of start signal indicating the transition of the Earth's internal energy into a new active phase, end quote. Well, can you imagine that? Let me read that last sentence again. I didn't write this. This is in the article from the Russian scientist. That huge energy release from the Earth's core at the end of the last year was some kind of a start signal indicating the transition of the Earth's internal energy into a new active phase, end quote. Now, if you don't call that scientific verification of the Gaia navigation experiment, I don't know what you would call it. If you want scientific verification, well, there it is. They call that eruption of signal from the Earth's core something like acoustical gravity waves. Now, I would say to you that that eruption from the Earth's core was, remember again this important distinction, intimately connected with the presence of mantis in the core. But as a matter of fact, it was scientifically detected as an acoustic gravitational wave because at that moment, mid-November 2011, the Earth, for the first time, released itself energetically from the gravitational capture of the solar system. This is confirmation that in correction, the mothership is assuming its own course of navigation according to its own propulsion. And you can't get any clearer than that. The fact that I could time that event almost to the exact day it happened, within 2 weeks of it happening, is a measure of the fact that this mythogenetic method can produce voracious results of a physical nature, of a physical factual nature. This is the power of the imagination when it's used in rigorous discipline within the framework of her story. So I made up this metaphor, if you will, which is the mythogenetic method. I made up a myth or a story or a narrative sequence. And in this narrative sequence, the tugboat Jupiter came in line with the Earth, and then as the Earth passed Jupiter on its inner track, the tug released its cables after having maneuvered the Earth into the correct position for a safe try of its own power. The tug released the Earth. It let slack to its hawsers. And within 2 weeks of that moment, which is a fraction of a second in earthly time, the detection of a shift in the gravitational capture of this planet was noted by five different geophysical stations around the world. I'm really, really happy to report this information in this briefing, and I'm obviously extremely proud of the work that I'm able to do and of your participation with me in this fantastic experiment charting the course of correction. So that's our first Navigator's briefing. It goes along with Crew Note 16, and it is all coming your way here on the last day of the Matangi shift in the momentous year of 2012. Thank you for your attention and safe passage to all.